What else?
Yes, I'm just fine, thank you. How are you? Yes, I can read you about it.
I was going to wear shorts, but I think I'm going to shave my head.
Justin's here to do what? To take the keys.
Good afternoon. Call to order the 66th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingart. I'm in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County.
Jack Schreier, Morris County, Freeholder.
Scott Wainack, Morrisville.
Elizabeth Calabrese, Bergen County, Freeholder.
Bill Cocker, Mayor, Chester Township.
Janice Kovach, Town of Clinton, Hunterdon County. Katie Shaway, the same county, Freeholder.
Tim Billingham, a Republican member from Mercer County.
Mimi Lentz, Precipity in Morris County.
Do we have anybody on the phone? We do have a quorum. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Tracy Carluccio, 10th member today. We have minutes from the our last meeting, April 10th.
I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or corrections to minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Minutes carry. My report is just two brief things. We at the last meeting voted to send a resolution to the governor about the closing of the state parks, that the threat of our resolution was so powerful that that action seems to have been reversed, but I've asked the staff to nevertheless prepare a letter to the governor and Commissioner Jackson to just explain the council's strong feeling that the park should stay open. So I'll do it that way if that's okay with everybody. And also we discussed several weeks ago that the staff was putting together a letter to the State Ethics Commission on the concerns that were raised by at least one member of the public about possible conflicts of interest by some members of council, and those concerns were raised in a slightly different way this week, and the staff is working on a letter to do that to the State Ethics Commission. That this will be done in the next couple of weeks and go to them and try to get clarification of that issue before guidance if it's needed. Other council members have other items? Okay. Go to the executive director's report.
Good afternoon, all. Briefly, to let you know that since our last meeting, we did execute the contract with Voorhees, the transportation planning contract. We've continued our informational meetings and had productive conversations with municipalities on plan conformance and TDR receiving potential. We've sent letters and emails out to all of the municipalities with information and applications for the initial assessment grants for plan conformance. And though we don't have any ready for your consideration for today's meeting, I just want to let you know the towns that have already expressed interest and called us and spoken with Lindsay Interlante, who's our manager for grants, or have spoken to myself or Tom, are Bedminster, Tewkesbury, Hampton Boroughs, Farha, Mount Olive, Morris Township, Bethlehem, Greenwich, Oakland, Town of Clinton, Holland, Bloomsbury, Washington Township, and Washington Borough. So a lot of interest expressed in those, in that application. Bring you up to date on some of the meetings. We had an informational meeting with the Township of Morris and one last night with Oakland Borough. We also had meetings with Holland Township and Washington Borough. Those were here in the office. Some other meetings that have occurred since we last saw you, which was April 10th, I believe. We had a meeting with Green Acres to go over the priority property acquisition methodology that we had done in-house here and talked over with you. And we also met with Department of Ag and State Agricultural Development Committee. So we discussed with those agencies the approach that the staff had talked about with the council and your discussions with us on that. Both offered us some suggestions, but both were generally pleased and agreeable to the methodology that we had proposed. Other than that, there was also April 18th, the Regional Plan Association had a conference in New York, and we did a presentation there on the Regional Master Plan, on the use of technology, the sharing of information. That's the information we highlighted at that conference, and Congressman Rush Holt attended our session, as did Jay Watson from Department of Environmental Protection. Other than that, I think the rest of what I have will wait until we do the issues for discussion under the Regional Master Plan.
Thank you. Any questions, Charles? We have one committee met, the Auditing Services Committee. Ms. Calabrese.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Audit Committee met this afternoon at 3 o'clock. It was unanimously agreed that the Audit Evaluation Committee, led by Tracy Carluccio, did an excellent job in the method used in evaluating the three bids that we received for auditing services for years ending June 2005, 2006, and 2007. It was also unanimously agreed that the bid be awarded to the firm that was recommended by the Audit Evaluation Committee. And there is a draft resolution in your package for consideration today.
But it's missing the amount and the contract with you.
Yeah, Tracy has it.
Never move it in.
Do we vote
on that now?
Yeah.
We won't approve it without knowing.
Right.
I don't have the bid with me. Can we say not to exceed 20.5?
We budgeted 15,000, so they'll give you an amount.
Okay, it was more than that.
It was 28.
Yeah, it was. I think it was. Was that it? 28.
We'll have to adjust our budget.
Okay.
The exact. I don't have the bid with me.
You say no.
I'm not going to pay for the order.
Yeah, maybe we should put this off until we have a day in front of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, yeah. It's fully advice that the recommendation that the committee accepted was that they award the contract to Arcadian for $28,000.
For $28,000?
Oh, do you have it? Thank you.
Okay.
Good. I thought we had an email on that.
Yeah. So would someone like to make that as a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
And I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion or questions? Do we now have somebody on the phone, it sounds like? Okay. Any comments from any of the members of the public? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for the work on doing that. I know that was why you joined the council in the first place. We now turn to item 11 on the agenda, which may take slightly longer than the first 10 items. And Eileen?
Okay, we're going to go over the different items on the agenda today that are issues of your consideration for the Regional Master Plan. The first of those issues is critical habitat. What we did here basically was looking at the language here to provide greater clarity and consistency in the language throughout the document. We looked at the comments received, and if you look at the PowerPoint to guide you through this today, changes were made to chapters 2, 4, and 5 in response to the comments received. We also used the experience that has been gained through the WQMP review. Changes are to clarify, add concepts, and address technical issues. Chapter 2, which is the analysis of the Highlands region, we made some changes there. We did send you those changes, and the public has the final document that we're looking at today for including in the final regional master plan. The changes here.
The documents we're looking at today in our packet are slightly different than the preliminary versions we received. On some issues
they are, and I will highlight those when we get to them. This one is unchanged from what we sent to you, so we haven't made any changes. In Chapter 2, the changes are to make sure that that there's consistency with the introduction to Chapter 4 and to clarify the delineation of critical habitat wildlife. We did also update, and I do apologize actually, Mr. Chair, there was one change, and that is we updated the information at the end of the second page under Chapter 2. It now reads, the Highlands Council delineated critical wildlife habitat by utilising Landscape Project Version 3 to identify areas of habitat for rare, threatened and endangered species habitat. Landscape Rank 3 through 5 and Landscape Rank 2 with Highlands Conservation Rank of critically significant or significant. Of the Highlands region's approximately 860,000 acres, approximately 509,500 acres are critical wildlife habitat. So that's updated information. When you move into now the critical habitat GPOs, those policies and objectives, in the introduction here is to clarify the definition of significant natural areas includes habitat for documented occurrences of threatened and endangered plant species. To clarify that critical habitat conservation and management plans will be used for development review and restoration activities. Clarifying that a goal for municipalities is to develop and implement a critical habitat conservation and management plan that achieves regional master plan goals and may be refined using local scientific knowledge and planning goals where they do not conflict with protection standards and criteria for critical habitat. And to clarify that when a critical habitat conservation and management plan has not been approved by council, site-by-site development applications in municipalities will be required to strictly adhere to RNP policies and objectives. Continuing with the goals, policies and objectives, to clarify policies to state that the council will develop a critical habitat conservation and management plan guidance document to implement the programme for habitat conservation and management. And just in case you would ask me, when will that be ready? It will be ready when we start the implementation process. So after plan adoption, we have that period, 9 to 15 months after adoption, where we have to be working with municipalities on plan conformance. We will have that guidance document ready for them at that point. Clarify policies to ensure that all developments employ the following sequence of low-impact best management practices if any disturbance is allowed. So for in the case of waivers, for example, this is the hierarchy. One, avoid disturbance of critical habitat. Two, minimize impact to critical habitat. And three, mitigate all adverse modification to critical habitat so that there is no net loss of habitat value. Clarify that habitat value is defined as quantity, so that's your acreage. Quality, for the example, is core forest versus edge forest. Type, scrub versus shrub vegetation, and function, for example, breeding habitat. The mitigation requirement of no net loss of habitat value ensures that all four elements are accounted for and included in mitigation design. Clarify policies to require periodic monitoring of conservation easements on critical habitat to protect habitat from changes in land use. And then finally, the critical habitat program. All the edited goals, policies, and objectives are now incorporated into that program, if you approve. To clarify that the program will be implemented through a critical habitat conservation and management plan that will provide standards for protection, conservation, and management of critical habitat. Clarify that critical habitat conservation and management plans will be used for development review and restoration activities. Clarify that Highlands Council will develop again that critical habitat conservation and management plan guidance. And finally, to clarify that the guidance will include requirements to avoid critical habitat unless allowed by a waiver based on the Highlands Act or for projects that are in conformance with council approved critical habitat conservation and management plan. The program goes on then to say that to clarify where a development project is proposed, conforming municipalities will require implementation of standards in the council-approved critical habitat conservation and management plan as a condition of local approval. Clarify where critical habitat conservation and management plan has not been approved. Again, those site-by-site development applications must adhere to the RMP goals, policies and objectives. And again, the same laid out there again in the program, exactly as was laid out in the goals, policies and objectives. The hierarchy of avoid, minimize and then mitigate, that's the order. And again, clarifying the no net loss. So really, what we were trying to do here is in response to the comments received to make sure that the language was very clear in what the intent was and to make sure that the language throughout the document was consistent.
Comments, questions?
I just want to say, I think the clarifications are good and important in the implementation, particularly the implementation stage, because there is, both an art and a science to habitat preservation and management restoration. I think clarifying the terms, clarifying the standards by which we're going to measure those plans, which by their nature may involve waivers or net losses of habitat, as long as it's compensated for, mitigated for, are important guidance that we need to put in this. One comment I would have is that in the sort of the phrase about local scientific knowledge in the development of the guidance document later on, that just needs to be important that scientific knowledge needs to reflect the sort of generally adopted state of science in the literature. And that is because you get techniques as to how do you define it. And the classic one is, you don't want people going looking for animals at times of their life cycle when they're under. And I think a good way to avoid that is to say that there are protocols out there which are generally accepted by the scientific community in taking us through those steps that are required by the process. And there's actually language, I think, in some of the other regulations that are out there about habitat preservation that can be adopted into that guidance when you get to that point.
Do you want to add something there?
No, I understand the concept that there are, we're working on a regional scale, that there's local knowledge that ought to be available and incorporated into this process. I just am trying to safeguard against potential problems by saying, it's not a rattlesnake, to use the example that's in here, is a rattlesnake. And I want somebody to say, well, I haven't seen a rattlesnake down here for years, but I'm out there looking for them in January. That's not science. So just to put some parameters around that in the guidance going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Other comments?
A question on the critical habitat conservation and management plan. That's definitely needed. You said it'll be before implementation, but maybe we could also see an example of what one of those completed plans would be. I think that would help us understand what it would look like, as early as possible. It would be great to see an example of what a plan would be.
Prior to care and I don't think I'd be prepared to, that isn't on our schedule to do before
implementation.
Well, absolutely on implementation, yes.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Okay, so we can get an idea early on.
Yeah,
what they will actually look like. That, I think that
would be, we would absolutely expect a meeting with you on that one, but it would be after Johnson. Thank you. Who's watching Aaron fade away?
Is there somebody on the phone? Something on the phone?
Is it around?
I don't know.
Okay. How many non-developed acres are there in the Highlands region right now?
How many non-developed acres? Anybody know the answer?
Yes, go.
Thank you, Craig. I'll get back to you on that.
Well, I'm just wondering how the figure early on, I think it was determined that there was 500 some odd thousand acres of critical habitat, so I'm wondering how that compares to the number of undeveloped acres.
Oh, okay. We can get back to you on that, Kurt.
But one thing I would note is that 500 and 1,000 acres includes a lot of acreage that's on preserved lands.
Right.
Okay. So there's an overlap. Yes.
Okay. No other questions? Go to Lake Management.
Okay. If again, with the Lake Management's GPO changes, the response to comments received, most of it is a clarification, primarily to address the distinction between the Lake Community subzones and undeveloped lake management areas. It allows for different tier standards with more stringent standards in the undeveloped acres. It clarifies that the council will coordinate with lake commissions and associations. The importance of maintaining the historic and cultural resources of lake communities is highlighted, because we didn't feel it was in the prior version, except for comments to us as well. And clarification is provided regarding failing septic systems in lake communities and the need for updated treatment to avoid harmful secondary impacts through selection of the most appropriate remedial approaches. That's really a sort of a quick overview on the lake management. No major departures, again, just really clarifications here. Thank you.
Questions or comments?
Steep slope goals, policies, and objectives. We did have standards in the steep slopes goals, policies, and objectives. This time we just amended the narrative to more fully describe the critical issues, clarifying the definition of steep slope categories. The categories remain the same, but it's a clarification. Adding language specifying that the Highlands Act exceptions for linear development in some steep slope applies. This is again consistent with the Act. And deleted language regarding waivers, and that's because we found a lot of duplication throughout the documents. So in all throughout the goals, policies, and objectives, we took that out. We're going to have one place where we refer to waivers, because obviously it applies across the board to all goals, policies, and objectives. And that is waivers consistent with the Highlands Act.
Can I go backwards? I just had a quick question on the landscape map 3 that we're using now for the overlays.
Yes.
That's developed by the DEP, correct?
Correct.
And so how do they develop it? Do they just have some scientists running around the state searching for the rattlesnakes not in January? Or, I mean, what is the actual process that deemed it reliable for us to use?
The landscape version 3 process is an update of what they did for landscape version 2. That document, the landscape version 2 methodology, is public, is out, and the landscape version 3 is supposed to be coming out for public review fairly soon. So, you know, it's material that we've seen, but we have not been able to make public, but we can definitely provide the landscape version 2 methodology, which will give you a really good sense. But basically, it's an intersection of, and Aaron, help me with this, but it's an intersection of confirmed identification of the species and then the linkage of those confirmed sightings to the habitat that is appropriate for those species. So it's, you know, you can have habitat that has no species, but basically the landscape project is to figure out where the habitat exists and the species are there and related to it.
Aaron, did you want to add to that?
No, that's essentially it. I mean, it's developed by DEP's Endangered and Non-Endangered Species Program that's chock full of wildlife and plant biologists. It's for them to be appropriate for delineating the habitat, but it's species-based occurrences, both through DEP identification, through, it often comes in through wetland permits. The species are identified during wetland delineation, stream encroachment studies, volunteers can submit reports to sites, but then they have to be verified.
So, but landscape version 3 is not finalized yet?
That's true.
And it's subject to public comment still?
They actually will give a public notice. They've incorporated into the rules already, and actually it's been subject to challenge by the Builders Association before. So the approach has been validated by the courts. This is an update to the landscape too, and the public give public notice in the New Jersey Register that they're going to be utilizing it. And there's also a process to rebut the delineation of the landscape boundaries, and so the DEP builds in a process so that applicants can say, I know you've mapped it as such, but based upon this information, it shouldn't be treated as such.
And we built in the same opportunity to rebut with if they have more detailed information.
So the landscape three has been the basis for this situation in Harding Township and Morris Township, where the bog turtles on one side of 287 and the property purchase for the playing fields is on the opposite side of 287. But because it's within a certain number of thousands of feet of the bog turtle sighting 4 years ago, they can't build playing fields.
It's landscape.
So all we had to do is get the bog turtle across 287. There's a bog turtle tunnel.
Yes,
or get a bog turtle predator.
It's a wood turtle.
Wood turtle. Thank you for that clarification. Yes. Well, I bring that example up only because, you know, everybody's ridiculing the COA stuff right now. And one has to question a bog turtle sighting on one side of 287 and how it can be applicable to the other side of 287.
Why would the turtle want to cross that road?
To get to the others.
I think Tom's point is, if this matter was before us and we were questioning the data, there's a process to do that. So
Mark, the answer is Harding Township and Morris Township petition the DEP and say that, you know, we don't agree with these findings. We think that 287 creates a suitable buffer to prevent the wood turtle from crossing. And yes, there may be this pipe, but the likelihood of the wood turtle finding the pipe and then crawling through the 1,000 feet of pipe is 1 in 1 million. So we believe there's reason to build playing fields for the kids to play on. I mean, is that the approach that would then happen?
There's a permitting process by which consultant reports are submitted in support of either side of the issue, without a doubt.
But basically, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
It's a rebuttal. Exactly. And as I said, that whole approach was challenged and upheld in the courts.
So was the guillotine.
Other questions on this?
Or whatever.
Other questions? Steep slopes. We got the steep slopes. Were there any questions?
I just wanted to ask, are we going to be putting together model ordinances for towns? Like, most of them probably have some kind of steep slope ordinance.
But what we're working on currently, Mimi, are standards that you would drop into the ordinances. We will have some model ordinances as well, or sample ordinances. But primarily what we're doing is creating the standards for each of the different elements that we're studying. And so that way the town can either look at their ordinances, see if they're consistent, and add in elements to make sure that the standards are equal or better than. So, but basically they will get that guidance and assistance from us.
Just wanted a point of clarity. The critical habitat applies to the preservation area, correct? Only the planning area they opt in?
All these resource protection standards are region-wide, and without a doubt they will apply to towns in the preservation area by nature of the mandatory nature of conformance, but the planning area towns have that choice. And then the resource protection policies may be adjusted through other means, or quality management plans, other reviews that come through, but the full range of ordinances wouldn't be required of a town in the planning area who can choose to.
So if I'm the mayor of Harding Township and I want to build playing fields and I just bought all this land from Morris Township for X number of millions of dollars, I'm certainly not going to try to create another layer of environmental controls to prevent me from building the playing fields for the kids. And my point is that when we consider how towns opt in, opt out, this plays into it, right?
Right, but I believe that our standards and DEP standards when it comes to critical habitat protection would be equal. I mean, I don't think that we're going to be, we're not the problem for them. The problem is that they have to face the critical habitat issue, regardless of whether it's through the Department of Environmental Protection or the Highlands Council.
So you're saying that our standards are completely equal to the DEP standards?
I think no, because vernal pools were certainly different on, so we're more protective in the case of.
And DEP's jurisdiction right now, they have not proposed or adopted any critical habitat rules. Their jurisdiction is really limited to permits that they now issue, which really excludes upland habitat. So wetlands, they capture habitat issues. Through water quality management plans, they capture some issues. But they don't have a comprehensive upland habitat program.
So this policy would It would actually have an impact on a planning area town that didn't opt in if it needed some approval that came before the council for a recommendation.
Yeah, and these things will be identified through the water quality management planning rules as well, too, which is to be adopted by DEP for the next several months.
All I'm just trying to get on the table is these are things that the mayor and the council is going to consider in these towns.
Right.
Like whether they want to be subjected to these things. I mean, there's pros and cons.
Well, one of our mandatory requirements is protection of flora and fauna, so we have to.
But they don't have to. Right.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, and remember, we're here to make a plan to protect the resources of the highlands.
Well, understood. But
I mean, everyone knows that.
But I think it also comes to, you know, the Declaration of Independence. You know, Adams and Company wanted to go all the way to not having slavery right at the inception of the country, and the compromise was if we're going to have a unified, independent country, we can't take slavery away from the South right now. And that was the compromise to get those southern states in. And all I'm saying is, I think at some point we're going to have to reconcile that to get, if you want towns to join in, you may have to give on a couple issues, or else, you know, all the planning area towns may thumb their nose and say, you know what, these rules are too egregious, we don't want any part of it. And then you get nothing.
I don't think this is a discussion we need to have now. I mean, it underlies everything we're doing in a way, in terms of you know, obviously wanting towns to opt in with the plan. And this is just one among many policies where that's a factor that we all may want to consider as we're figuring out the right policy. So the question
the reason I bring it up is because we're discussing more than just sightings. We're talking about even the existence of habitat.
Right.
So, I mean, if you have a habitat that could support the box turtle, even though you've never seen a box turtle there, if correct me if I'm wrong, you still are subject to this policy.
Right. It's important to note that the science behind the model, that were in landscape, presume that this is suitable habitat. So the fact that what's left out of the anecdote is the fact that there probably were wood turtles utilizing those sites before we drove Route 287 through the middle of it. You know, the science, as Tom mentioned, has been vetted not only by, I think there's actually an external advisory committee of Rutgers and other scientists to make sure that the methodologies are accurate and reflect that kind of thing, but also the court. So it's not quite as flip, I think, as Chris characterized
it. But what is flippant is how many bog turtles or how many wood turtles are necessary in New Jersey to improve our quality of life. You know, we're talking about identifying habitat. Well, if we're identifying habitat, we're doing it because we think there's some sort of value in having wood turtles. Well, how many wood turtles does it take? Is it 5, 10, 1,000? How many wood turtles do we need to make life better for the Allstate kids?
Well, I think, as you said, Curry, it's a matter of value. And while you may not value them, the legislature set out for us protection of habitat, the protection of endangered species, as part of our charge through this planning process. So the value question has been answered by the legislature, you know, in our task before us.
And Mr. Chair, I think also it's not a matter of quantity, and it's not a matter of improving us as residents' lives. It's about protecting the resources of the highlands. And we do have that charge from the legislature, but this is an ongoing debate. We've been debating it for a couple of years now, and you know, this process right now is putting in final form what we've heard from the public, and this council has, you know, debated since we started. And, you know, I think we just have to set aside at this point angst over whether or not people are more important or animals are more important. We have a variety of qualities that we are supposed to protect through our effort here, and we have to protect those.
But we're also charged to protect the economic viability of the region.
Let me say something I suspect various of us will say numerous times in the next 3 months, is I think what we're doing here is we're talking about the second comments on the second draft released to the public, and as much as possible, we should be focused on any specific language or concepts we want to change and not the underlying philosophies. I mean, I think we all know the philosophic points of view and issues that in large measure we share, but so the question is, I mean, Kurt, I think if you're suggesting that there's something we should be saying differently in the critical habitat, then let's talk about that. and not the more abstract question.
Well, no, not their habitat, because what I heard was if somebody happened to see one, they go out to do a review, they may find a lot more habitat over here, which wasn't where the original sighting was. And then all of the habitat that would be suitable to the wood turtle is mapped. And so it's more than just where the wood turtle's living right now, it's where a wood turtle could live.
Doesn't there have to be some kind of documented sighting that goes along with the, you know, the habitat?
Eileen, if I may.
I was going to point out that Objective 1F5B does speak to the fact that these areas can be modified if an applicant can demonstrate the satisfaction of the council in coordination with NGDEP's Endangered Non-Game Species Program or Natural Heritage Program that the nature of the site is such that it does not provide habitat for species of concern. Species of concern are not present on the site during any critical part of their life cycle, nor depend upon the site for food, shelter, or breeding, or existing land uses present a significant, insurmountable, and permanent barrier to the use of the site by species of concern that is infeasible to mitigate. So there is that opportunity there, Kurt, and I think it's important to point it out.
I think also this is a policy we did debate, and this is what we decided to put into the plan. It's not a new policy today, is what I'm saying.
But the implications
are not new.
Right.
This is how.
But there's new examples. But there's new examples of how they impact daily life, and I think it's important that we recognize where the rubber hits the road with these decisions we're making, and eyes wide open.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't sense particular interest beyond Kurt in maybe changing the language of this at this point. We should move on to discuss others. I mean, you know, despite the fact that language has been in the plan even from the beginning, we can certainly change it if there's a consensus to do that. I think as long as the wood turtles haven't made campaign contributions to the mayor,
don't check
my
records.
So, RMP updates, I guess?
Yes.
Were there any comments on steep slopes beyond what?
Regional master plan updates. What we did here was that in response to comments, we received comments that said that it was confusing to see the updates and the adjustments folded together because they are very different issues. So what we did here and before you today is just the RMP updates. We'll be viewing the adjustments at a subsequent meeting. So this is separated out now. We added new objectives to address facilitating and coordinating the exchange of factual information and the housing of same. So this is all to do with any information we receive, factual information on any of the data layers collected by the Highlands Council. We did talk as well, and we put it into this program, about how we will do this work. And given that we may have a lot of interest in updates after the plan goes out, we wanted to say that in order to make sure that that the staff time is allocated in a reasonable manner, what we will do is we'll process updates, we'll give priority to those communities that are coming into plan conformance, or of course if there's some site-specific review in front of us, we would look at the updates then. But updates will be done for all communities, planning, preservation, anybody that gives us that information, we will do the work. We did set forth in the program standardized digital submission requirements, to assist in making sure that we get the information, that we can verify the information and update it. All of the updates will be documented and publicly available. We did speak to you before about updating our property search tool, that as we will be calling it the HiMap, which will be the method which we'll be doing this with in the future.
What this isn't meant to address is the process we'll go through to do this. I just want to ask when, at what point we would be discussing what level, you know, what would be being done by the council, what would be being done by subcommittees, what would be being done by the staff in terms of decisions like this.
We felt that this wasn't something that would have to go through that kind of committee or council process. We'd report out on it, but this is basically factual information. So it's, for example, where a town says our existing area served for potable water, pipes in the ground, we have more pipes in the ground than you're showing, and they give us, they verify factually and give us the information so that we can update. That will verify it and then update it. So it's not something I believe that you're going to want to try to go through all of these, because they are factual information. If it has a knock-on effect in any fashion or form, we take it back to you.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I'm just asking where that would be stated, that the process, I mean, at what point, you know, at some point the council has to approve a process to confirm that, if that's what we're doing.
Okay. And right, that's like the resolution from...
Well, and also, like critical habitat, we are developing specific application guidelines which would develop a process by which updates would be reviewed and approved by the council. And effectively, that would delegate it.
So that would say explicitly whether it's the council or the staff? Or, you
know, yes, we'll set forth those procedures.
And that's one of the reasons we separated this from adjustments, which are very much more a policy issue,
right,
which would certainly go through the council, through council decision-making and performance.
Okay on that?
Mm-hmm.
Housing and community facilities, goals, policy, and objective changes. And we did hear... bring community facilities into the goals, policies, and objectives for housing. What we did here was we updated to specify that the goal of market rate and affordable housing sufficient to meet the needs of the Highlands region is within the context of economic, social, and environmental considerations and constraints. Clarification regarding preferred locations and development approaches for housing initiatives. Community facilities policy discussion has been clarified and located now in the Housing and Community Facilities Program. Affordable housing policies. Conforming municipalities are required to implement the New Jersey Supreme Court's Mount Laurel doctrine that every municipality in a growth area has a constitutional obligation to provide, through its land use regulations, sound land use and long-range planning, a realistic opportunity for a fair share of its region's present and prospective needs for housing for low and moderate income families. That language was developed by Tom to be consistent with Mount Laurel. To meet this obligation, conforming municipalities are encouraged to participate in COA's substantive certification process. Alternatively, the Fair Housing Act authorizes municipalities to seek a court-ordered declaratory judgment. So there what we've done is we've talked about the Fair Housing Act and its implications and making sure that a municipality is consistent with its constitutional obligation and consistent with the Fair Housing Act. Affordable housing policies, the objective 607 is that all 88 municipalities in the Highlands region would receive certification from COA. Not mandatory, but again, recommended. Presently, 73 of the 88 municipalities are under COA's jurisdiction. Municipalities are required to adopt a housing element fair share plan and implementing ordinances to reflect current conditions and implications of the regional master plan. Preserve and monitor existing stocks of affordable housing. And affordable housing, now this is as a result of our conversations with council members, we've added some more language here, that the affordable housing program is updated to reflect policy changes and to clarify how the regional master plan and related resource protection standards may affect municipal obligations. Housing metrics added or recognized and discussion of indicators that support planning decisions and long-term trend evaluation of housing. Job housing balance and development activity metrics. General assistance for eligible projects program component added to discuss agency coordination, technical assistance, and Highlands planning grants and incentives for housing initiatives that support the regional master plan policies.
Excuse me, I have a question on that page. I mean, if you could go back to that. Oops, no, maybe it's where it said that it's been clarified. It was at the top of the page. Maybe back one more. It was the page you were just speaking to.
Oh. The last one? This one?
Okay. Where? I don't see where in the program it clarifies how the RMP and standards may affect municipal obligations. Where would I find that?
This is the new one we just added to.
6 or 07 in the packet?
Basically, we
this were... This was in our packets today, but not in the material we got.
Yeah, Debbie, this wasn't what was sent to you. This was as a result of the briefing calls. Yes, okay.
So basically what we did is we merged the requirement to meet the resource protection requirements in the plan in 607, if you see it, along with the constitutional obligation to provide affordable housing. So the municipality would be required, when they're doing a fair share plan and a housing element, to implement all of the resource protection requirements in the plan and analyze all the information and resource protection requirements and utilize our build-out analysis, which we'd be able to provide at the localized level, to update the analysis for a housing element and a fair share plan.
So I understand that there's a constitutional obligation to meet its fair share, but I still don't see how any of this verbiage addresses the issue that we've talked about in the past, was what does a municipality do when they are unable to comply with both the Highlands Act and the co-rules.
It would be helpful, Tom, if you went through the process a bit. I mean, for exactly the answer to the question, Debbie's question.
Sure. I mean, I think this is a hot button issue just given the nature of where COLA is in the rulemaking process. But I think let me sort of step back and say that COLA, when they developed their rules and their projections, utilized the existing information they had available to them, which was at that time the preservation area rules by DEP. They have not been able, because we have not adopted the plan, utilized all the resource protection requirements and policies in this plan. They are, however, required to, as a result of the Highlands Act, consider the implications of the regional master plan when they analyze municipal petitions for substantive certification. So what this policy would do is ensure that municipalities both fulfill their constitutional obligation and meet the resource protection requirements. COA's regulations include provisions, and actually the Fair Housing Act itself, for adjustments to address resource protection needs that's specified in the Fair Housing Act. So their existing process has a mechanism to ensure that lands that are not vacant or not developable due to environmental constraints can be addressed through us working with those towns to make sure that the resource protection needs of the master plan are met. And this is also consistent with what the Supreme Court has consistently said, is that by no means do they see that resource protection, especially in non-growth areas of the state, such as the Highlands and the Pylons, that protecting of those regions can be done consistent and coordinated with meeting the affordable and housing obligations that the Constitution requires.
If the growth capacity outlined in the eventual, when we have the build-out analysis, in the regional master plan, if that growth capacity in our plan is less than the growth projections in the COA rules for a given municipality, you're saying a municipality can make an adjustment to reduce their affordable housing obligations?
Right.
There's actually apply to COA, for
example. Yes. Exactly. There's actually there's several. The one that's talked about a lot is the vacant land adjustment. But actually, not talked about a lot, which is important to us, is a durational adjustment. And that goes to not being able to provide infrastructure in the timetable by which the affordable housing can be built. So in terms of water availability and sewer capacity issues, those become very important to the extent the master plan may have identified areas that are in deficit, that have limitations on sewer capacity, that we will be able to provide very detailed information and assist municipalities in doing a very detailed analysis at a municipal level, which we've now done at a regional level, to be able to bring that down to a municipal level. And the COA's existing rules have those adjustment procedures already built into it.
There's a section of the COA rules. Section 5, colon 94-22, determining the fair share obligations. There's something here that appears inconsistent with what you've just said. And how this has been explained to me by professionals working on this issue is that in one section of the COA rules, it talks about adjustments. But then when you look at some of the language, the only kind of adjustment that's permitted is an increase. And in this section, it says, lays out the, you know, one per five units, one must be affordable, all those things that we know and love about these proposed rules. And then it goes on to say, alternatively, a municipality may utilize its own growth projections to calculate growth share, which is what these, the RMP data would be, provided the municipal projections exceed the projections in Appendix F, which is the COA. So I'm going to suggest you take another look at this, because I'm going to repeat my comments in the past about this. It is going to be impossible for municipalities to comply, particularly those with a lot of land in the preservation area and other constrained lands, to comply with both of these. And this is something we need to be concerned about. We're supposed to be managing land use. They're certainly guiding land use in this region. And these are regulations that are an impediment to that. And again, we don't want municipalities to be in a situation that they're caught in the middle and they can't do either. And we leave it for them to fight it out in court, whether or not they're subject to a builder's remedy or...
Well, that might be the best course, to fight it out in court. Remember, COA is not going to come and say, build a house. Builder is going to come and say, I want to build a house. And the reality is, if you say I conform to the RMP growth projections, and the builder's going to say, well, you didn't conform to the COA projections, the only person that's ever going to make sense out of that is going to be the court.
Unfortunately, I live in a town of 5,000 people, and I don't want to fund that litigation and fight that.
I don't know how you're going to get around it.
These rules are going to get litigated. That's what's going to end up happening, probably.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I'm not disagreeing because there's a lot of problems, and we're just dealing with, you know, one aspect of it related to our plan here.
But if you don't put a mandatory element that we conform to the RMP, then you don't have any basis or rationale to go into court and say, I'm conforming based upon the best data that I got from another state agency that tells me that my gross share obligation ought to be based on the constrained lands. That's a pretty compelling argument if you have to go to court. Absent that requirement, you have no compelling argument. You just say, well, I chose to use that. No, we're being told that you must conform to the RMP growth projections. Using that as a lever, it gives you some, although minimal, some background in order to move forward. I think it's important that it be in there. Ideally, I'd like to see the COA rules go away.
And you know, this issue isn't about providing affordable housing.
No.
It's that the affordable, I mean, I'll speak for my own municipality. There's not a reluctance to provide the fair share. The reluctance is to provide four share and then a multiplier of four new housing that exceeds what the local zoning is.
I have a requirement that's almost greater than the availability of lots. So I don't know what you do.
We can commiserate during the break here about something. No, but this is important. And another factor related to this is whatever the analysis is that are done in municipalities, our build-out analysis is a critical element. Where do we stand with that build-out analysis?
We'll be presenting the build-out analysis to you before adoption of the plan.
How soon before adoption? Because this is a major factor. I hope not 2 days before.
No, not 2 days before.
June?
It'll be in June.
Will that be broken down by municipality?
It is a regional build-out analysis, so there are assumptions made at a regional level. It will be then through conformance that we get down to the numbers with each municipality.
The reason I'm bringing up the build-out analysis is I think we as a council have to do some sort of critical analysis of these rules relative, you know, the Appendix F, which contains all these numbers, Appendix X versus what our build-out analysis shows. And I think it's incumbent on us to point out where the conflicts are going to be between those, and sooner rather than later. And again, not just, we need to have time to determine what we should be doing about this, not a week prior to plan adoption.
We actually have been working on this since we released the draft plan. We've done several runs, and we have to keep correcting, going back, checking our analysis, and so we will be bringing that to you in June.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the build-out analysis isn't really going to answer this question on a town-by-town basis. It's going to be the process that Tom outlined of a town saying, if it feels that way, that the COA numbers are too large given the responsibility or desire to comply with the Highlands plan, and therefore going back to COA for an adjustment. My understanding of this.
Yes, it certainly.
And going back to COA, as Bill said, going back to COA, assuming they're interpreting the Highlands plan the way we do, armed with the Highlands Council's concurrence, that in fact the town doesn't accommodate the number.
And assuming the rules actually provide an adjustment procedure, which Tom's going to look at now after.
Why can't we take the build-out analysis and break it down by municipality?
We would have to work with municipalities to do it at that level. But we have enough information to do it regionally, and the results of that analysis will show you the difference overall in the numbers between the two between COA and us. But we can't get it to the down to 88 municipal levels. We will do that through conformance, but those numbers will be used to get to that to the municipal level.
Other comments?
Okay, the final matter for you today, and we didn't, there's no paperwork in terms of putting this into the regional master plan, and this is a policy decision we want to discuss with you today. And we're bringing it to you today because counties are now engaged in doing water quality management plans. And Somerset County is currently working with the Department of Environmental Protection on its plan and so needed some answers from us. So we were working with the Department of Environmental Protection and Somerset County. And so the issue before you today is the standard of review. Consistency determinations for water quality management plan amendments, proposed use or expansion of wastewater or water supply infrastructure, and the proposed septic density standards. The staff recommendation, we have staff recommendation for the council, but before I get to what I'd like to do is I'd like to have Tom discuss for you a little bit of the thoughts behind our recommendation and where we are with this.
And effectively what this issue boils down to is the issue of conforming towns versus non-conforming towns. As you know, we do water quality management plan consistency determinations for the entire region, the preservation area and the planning area. DEP will soon be adopting new rules which require the counties, and if they don't so choose, municipalities or other entities to plan using their updated water quality management planning requirements. It's a very similar approach to what we're doing in the regional master plan in terms of resource protection. The one deviation we've identified is the septic density analysis, that our septic density thresholds in our protection zone, in our conservation zone, are more stringent than the DEP standards, which require, well, if they're adopted, 2 milligrams per liter throughout the state. It's a statewide average, 2 milligrams per liter. So the county, that's why I mean, said counties have already been coming to us, and it's a policy issue we need direction on from you. Basically, the staff recommendation is that we have traditionally been reviewing water quality management plans in terms of expansion of sewers, in terms of new sewage treatment plants and expansion of sewers, that we continue to say that those expansions of sewers and infrastructure, both water and sewer, are inconsistent with the regional master plan to the extent they're trying to extend into our protection zone or our conservation zone. Where it gets more difficult is the issue of septic density, because the counties are now being asked by DEP, well, what septic density shall I apply in a non-conforming municipality? If the town is conforming, it becomes a lot easier. They'll be using our septic density thresholds. But to the extent the town chooses to not conform, which is their choice, our recommendation is that they utilize the DEP threshold, 2 milligrams per liter. The context, and I did provide a legal memo to provide you with a basis. We're of the opinion you have the authority to require full conformance on these issues to the extent the Water Quality Planning Act seeks to coordinate. Although we do see a major policy issue in terms of the non-conforming towns, in that septic densities are very akin to zoning densities. And I hope that's enough of an overview of the issues. Number two, I think it's important to note that we we would continue to require the resource protection standards where requiring ordinances to ensure that other issues of resource protection are done through municipal ordinances, again, even in non-conforming towns. But that issues above and beyond what DEP is requiring, I'll give an example, karst, would be simply a recommendation. But things that DEP are requiring towns to do, we would offer a consistency analysis for resource protection as well. So essentially, the one exception is the septic density thresholds.
What's the level of magnitude of difference like going to be in hypothetical planning towns?
The average for DEP with the 2 milligrams per liter is going to be roughly in the, depending on the soils and the recharge and so on, you might be talking about 3 to 8 acre densities. And for us, the average in the conservation zone is around 10, and the protection zone, the average is around 26. So once you get to the protection zone, the differences are quite significant. Conservation zone, a bit less so. Existing community zone where septic systems are used would be even less so in terms of the difference.
But the one thing I would add is that the scientific analysis we did to develop our threshold will still be available to towns should they wish not to conform, but utilize our septic density analysis. It would be helpful nonetheless.
So this, the justification for not using or not applying our scientific analysis in that situation would be what?
Well, it relates back to the voluntary nature of plan conformance, and that towns in the planning area, and this is all, we're all just talking about non-conformance, so they have an option in terms of conformance.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question. The way I understand the proposed water quality management plan rules, if a town wants to adopt a stricter standard, they can. So they don't have to use the 2 over HUC 11 that is included in the water quality management plan rules. They can. A town may have done a nitrate dilution model for its own town and set, you know, a different septic densities based on local conditions. Is that right?
Correct. And that's what I was saying, is they can utilize the information we've developed for that very reason.
Okay. Now, if a town were to use the information that we have and yet not opt in, they could still go ahead and do that.
Yes. A question. Are we going to get a copy of this? Can we get a copy of this PowerPoint?
Yes.
It's not in here, right?
No.
I would like to just, I can reread, but I missed part of it. Where did we get it? We received a confidential memo related to this issue. Are we going to talk about this?
Well, Tom just referred to it.
We referred to it, but we have an opportunity to discuss what's in it at any time?
Yeah, but I'll be glad to answer questions to the extent if it's something I'm returning client, I'll stop and we can go to the executive session. But basically what I tried to do is outline the purpose of the Water Quality Planning Act. The basic conclusion is that we would have the authority, should you so desire, to require it. We do see, however, a concern about the intersection of the voluntary nature of planning.
I guess the issue, whether we discuss it now or at another time, is this seems inconsistent with some matters we've discussed in the past. And I'm thinking there was a memo to the National Resources Subcommittee, Tim, about a year ago that addressed, I thought we, this voluntary nature, I thought we hashed that all out. I didn't go back and pull that out. But I recollected it, and I thought this may have been inconsistent.
It's very consistent. It's that was in the context of exempt applications. Is that
exactly
even when they're exempt, the Water Quality Planning Act does allow for a continuing planning process to allow for a coordinated review. And the bottom line, however, is that whatever you put in the plan is what you deem as appropriate for coordinated review. That's why essentially this comes down to a policy determination. You would have the legal authority. We were recommending something of a policy nature, but that's ultimately your decision.
Mr. Chairman, I think Tom's right, that I think this this actually affirms that earlier conversation, debate, whatever you want to call it, about the authority that we have to utilize, particularly the water quality management plan process, to advance standards that are in the RMP. And as I expressed to Eileen and Tom yesterday, I disagree with this memo and I disagree with this recommendation. I think that fundamentally, if you think about the septic system standards, like every other standard that we adopt in this plan, represents our best judgment about what is scientifically in the best interest of this region and consistent with our charge of the legislature to protect the resources in our region. So by comparison, a standard which allows more pollution, the 2 milligram per liter standard that the DEP is applying on a statewide basis, is in contradiction to that. And in essence, if we were to adopt that standard, we would be saying, even though scientifically we believe that the standard should be more restrictive or tighter, let less pollution go into the groundwater, we're going to defer to that. I think that's contrary to our mission. And again, I understand the concern that it is going to charge, it's going to change land use patterns significantly, mainly because those land use patterns now don't take into consideration the protection of groundwater in the same way that we are. That's, again, the whole purpose of the Highlands Act. And I disagree with Tom's characterization about this being akin to zoning. I think clearly the intent of the septic standards are to protect the integrity of groundwater. And in that, that's how we ought to deal with them. We obviously have ramifications for how many houses get put on a certain piece of geography, but you know, their intent is to establish an input of nitrates or other pollutants, you know, at a level that's going to protect that groundwater. And that's why we ought to include that in that set of standards that we believe ought to be advanced, even in non-conforming municipalities, through the mechanisms that are available to do it, to do that. And it kind of comes down to, you know, what elements of this plan do we want to advance? Which ones are most central to what we're here for? And protection of the groundwater, and by extension, because of that relationship between groundwater and surface water, the surface water and the drinking water, that's the first base, you know, that we ought to be touching as we go forward on this. So I would recommend that we do include the septic standards in those elements that we review against in non-conforming municipalities for those reasons.
I have a question. Somebody else did. What is the advantage beyond the voluntary conformance issue to us not doing this?
The advantage.
Yeah. I mean,
what's the rationale for your recommendation?
Yeah.
I guess.
Right. How does it advance? You know, what's the rationale in terms of our goals under the Act?
Well, and that's why essentially we said this is very much a policy determination. It's the intersection of DEP's new water quality management plans totally changes the dynamic of analysis of septic density. They're going to be requiring that throughout the region. So it does fundamentally come down to the issue of the voluntary nature of plan conformance, and there's no doubt about it.
But in terms of septic density, we will be at variance from what we've decided is best for the water resource. Correct.
It's out of time.
Okay.
And is that a deviation from what we've done in the past? I sense yes. There's a change in direction,
but
I'm not on top of it enough to say it's a point of this document.
We've never really wrestled with this. That's the problem.
General, up until now, we haven't wrestled with the issue of we've applied all policies to the planning area. The few opportunities we've had to do that.
And it's in the context of extending sewers. That's the fundamental distinction, is that we have yet to coordinate in a non-conforming town simply the septic density issue. And that's what we're saying, is that the issue of water supply and sewer capacity, both in terms of water supply for the deficit issues, will be addressed, continued, as we have done before. The one issue which the council hasn't wrestled with yet is when a full water quality management plan is proposed, what is the appropriate septic threshold?
So if this is a change in direction, who's called for the change in direction?
Well, it was essentially a new issue that we confronted, that we realized, and we brought it to the council because we need a major policy recommendation from the council.
Okay.
It came out of these new water quality management plans and the fact that Sussex County, sorry, Somerset County, is out ahead doing its pilot project. So they want to do the work and they want guidance on this. And we haven't wrestled with it before, so we're bringing it to you so that we can let them know what they're going to do. They're starting their meetings and they're considering how they will advise the municipalities.
I have a question. If a municipality wants to apply the RMP standard rather than the 2 milligrams per liter that the DEP standard calls for, a municipality can do that even in a non-conforming municipality in the 103. Is that correct?
Correct.
In the same way, relative to the question that Tracy was asking. You can always go more stringently if you choose to.
Yes.
But by doing the plan the way the recommendation states it, we are keeping hands off those municipalities that do not choose to conform and are not required to conform. Is that correct as well?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns that I have about the water quality management plan proposed rules, which are supposed to be adopted very soon, is this this different way of approaching how you apply their nitrate dilution model. And using the HUC 11, if you do a build-up analysis for your town based on the new rules, in my town, for instance, your density is a lot greater under the new rules than it would have been under the nitrate dilution model and the septic density that we had worked out through our master planning process. And one of the worries that towns have who are in this situation is that even though, related to my question earlier and your question just now, Jack, even though towns have the ability to go stricter, there's going to be tremendous pressure. It feeds the fire on the developing side, and it also lends a lot of power behind the counties who are supposed to be then the regional agencies that are supposed to step up to the plate in order to do this for all the towns, to normalize across their, on a countywide basis, not even a watershed basis, like the septic density issue based on this. And I submitted comment strongly against this because of the concerns related to pushing towns who have a more protective regulations in place towards weaker protections for groundwater, particularly towns that are dependent on groundwater through either individual wells or municipal wells, but for all towns. So, I think in keeping it with that and what Tim has pointed out as a major issue of how we're approaching these issues across the board and our mission here, it seems like we are sort of going against ourselves, and we're turning about on a policy that we've set on the sewer extensions. And I think we could really, I don't see the advantage to the council to do this because, number one, we will end up polluting or allowing water to be more polluted with nitrates. That is, there'll be higher concentrations of nitrates allowed. But number two, and Debbie, I think, this is what your question was getting to. In the past, our policies have all been, to use whatever methods there are in order to put in place as much as possible the policies that we've developed based on science. And this is going against that. And I know what you're saying. It's been mainly pertaining to sewers and sewer extensions. But, really, this is the same thing. It's just discharges to groundwater as opposed to surface water. So in terms of pollution or water quality issues, it really is the same thing. And we have already established this as a policy for the council on all these other issues. It would seem to be really odd to change it based on this issue.
Council members, we haven't spoken on this subject yet.
And I think we've had a number of policy discussions over the last couple of years, and we keep talking about that we want municipalities to conform. And yes, we do. And we have to be mindful that we have to stay within reasonable bounds on some things. But I think we need to keep reminding ourselves that the Highlands Act does not state as a goal conformance by municipalities to a regional master plan that's developed. The goals or the statements of the Act itself are to protect resources. And that's what we need to focus on, hopefully in a mindful way that it allows for municipalities to conform. But if we can't focus just on conformance statistics, we're going to have a weak plan, and so what? We got 80% of municipalities to conform. That's a pyrrhic victory. We've achieved nothing if we haven't protected resources in the meantime. And I think that's it's just something we need to think of as we debate, deliberate on some of these matters.
But in this case, I don't think it's not a conformance grant. Because in this case, if a town wants to conform, they would have to conform with the Highland Standard.
So that's
a question. If they don't want to conform, if they don't haven't yet conformed.
But we've heard comments that, oh, we have to, you know, some in the discussion today about, you know, we can't make these standards too strict or nobody's going to conform. That's what I'm.
Yeah, but in this specific one, that's not the question on the floor here. The standard for a town that conforms is going to be strict.
Right.
It's a question of if they don't conform, what should we be saying?
But you have 80% buying in and choosing to conform, those stricter standards are going to apply. Not the more lax standards, Debbie, correct?
I understand.
Right, okay. I see this as not what you refer to as a rollback of our intentions and our protections. I remember the very first task force meeting, I think you may remember too. I've been on the same committee then, but one of the chief concerns of the task force at that point was, what should we do? Should we take the 800 and some odd acres of the Highlands and make it one entity, and all of the protections are going to be identical for the entire Highlands region, or are there levels of protection that go away from the core area where the protection needs to be the most stringent? And the answer was the latter. And at one point, we were talking about dividing it into three areas, not just what turned out to be the planning area and the protection area. And likewise, even in our concepts here, we do not have the same need to protect every part of the Highlands that we are dealing with, of the entire Highlands region, to the same degree. Am I correct about that? That's why we have these overlay zones. They apply different standards within the overlay zones. And I think that's what we're talking about here, is that we have municipalities that do not now have to conform to the strictest requirements, because it's not necessary for them to, and it's not legislated that they do so. And all we're saying is give those municipalities an opportunity to do what they need to do on a voluntary basis. They may want to adopt stricter standards, or they may not want to. Towns that already have more protection and more protective standards are not going to be deviating from those simply because we allow a laxer standard elsewhere. They've already made that decision.
It's a timing question. If we went ahead, if the final plan incorporated the staff recommendation, so then our guidance, in this case to Somerset County, would be as following that, and then towns in the planning area opted in subsequently. How would that work? Would that render the county's plan somewhat out of date instantly, or?
We did discuss that with Somerset, and they said, sorry, with Department of Environmental Protection, they did not see that as a problem. They said once the town's conformed, they would change to elevate it to those standards.
Well, Tracy had a phrase I think about. What's the advantage to the council in following this recommendation?
I'm sorry, John, I couldn't hear you.
Tracy had a phrase when she talked earlier about the advantage. She didn't see the advantage to the council, and that's what I'm trying to understand.
I guess that sums up to where I'm on this. Why would we do this?
We would do this because we are allowed to do this and we are required to do this under the Act. And I think the advantage to the council is exactly what you're referring to. If we can get 80% of the municipalities that are not required to conform to indeed conform, then we have achieved a great deal. And we then have the ability to tighten up those standards. Otherwise, it looks like we are imposing standards in areas that we do not have the authority right now to impose them. And I guess the phrase that has been used is a backdoor way to impose protection standards in areas that are not required.
But I thought Tom just said we do have the authority.
We do have the authority. Yeah. I guess, you know, it was only a matter of time before that phrase came out. Because it's the same old...
Which phrase?
The backdoor conformance. after 4 years of discussing this, the statute does not rely solely upon conformance as a mechanism to implement the act. Right?
Correct.
Right. Okay. It relies upon our authority to utilize things like water quality management planning. So to characterize this as being not within our authority, or that we've been directed to do otherwise, or directed to give certain areas of the Highlands less protection when we have an opportunity to give them what we've decided is the right protection, is completely erroneous. We can make a political decision that we think that this is going to spark a reaction. We're going to lower the bar so much in terms of conformance to get the numbers, as Debbie characterized them, in there. Or we can push ahead and figure out the right mix of incentives and other requirements to put the scientifically based standards that we've already agreed upon consistently across this region.
But again, this question doesn't have any impact on town, on how many towns conform, because if a town conforms, they have to meet the Highlands standard anyway.
Right, that goes to my point about we should be implementing this act even in towns that choose not to conform.
No, I understand that, but this isn't, I mean, the argument of we should consider whether certain actions we take are going to make it scare away some towns from conforming. This isn't one of those questions.
Yes, that's true.
I totally agree with you.
And as a matter of fact, that's what Jack just said to Debbie.
Right, right.
And now, then Jack said the opposite. I think it's absolutely true that.
You're right.
But I think I totally agree with what Tim just said on this. I think we also have to think about a couple other things that we've talked about, and that is we had thought, you know, when discussing the water quality management plan process, particularly because we had to look at plans as we, you know, before the RMP was complete, we had talked about us as the council applying to become the agency that is the planning, what is it called? The planning
delegated.
The delegated planning entity to do the water quality management plans for the Highlands, which all Highlands communities, which I think is a terrific idea. I mean, I think it would be attractive to the state, and I think it would be, you know, the region would greatly benefit in terms of consistency and good outcome from that planning process. And I would just say, if we're going to do that, which we would have to throw away that role if we do this, because what we're talking about, and one of the reasons that we wanted to become the designated planning agency, is to be able to make sure that we get the highest and best protection for the water resource when it comes to this very type of issue. So it's just another thought that we want to be able to try to move ahead with that function, and we would be working against ourselves if we were to consider this policy.
Are there members of the council who haven't spoken on this issue? There's not, I think. I mean, I have great respect and think the council should give some deference to the expertise of the staff, recommendation staff, but I think, at least from the people who have spoken, you haven't made the case. So what I'd suggest is either you change it or we revisit it at another subsequent meeting.
There is a timing issue in this, that Somerset is meeting with its municipalities starting next week, and they need to give guidance to their municipalities. Because the municipalities will be told that they have to adopt our nitrate standards for the areas that fall within the Highlands, for those municipalities that fall within the Highlands region, planning and preservation area, that they'll be adopting our nitrate standards. So we need to be able to tell Somerset what the direction is to those municipalities.
Well, there may be a silent majority here, I don't know, but if I ask for a straw vote now, we are meeting again next Thursday, is that...
And they're meeting next Tuesday with
the first. Mr. Chairman, yeah. I would argue that whatever answer they give to the municipalities a week from now is not going to be chiseled in stone.
Well, nor will, that's true, nor will ours today. But
we certainly didn't want, we let Somerset know that we would bring this to you, because we certainly didn't want to go out on a staff recommendation.
Well, let me do that as a straw vote. I mean, just as a show of hands, how many people on the council at this point would support the staff recommendation on this issue? It's not quite a majority. So it would need two more to be a majority.
We're split.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to tell Somerset County this issue is not resolved yet.
Right.
So timing, we apologize for the awkward timing,
right,
but the issue is not resolved.
Yeah.
And that this is a deviation from what we've done in the past, and they have to give us a resolution.
Well, I would.
Result.
I'd like to think about it.
Yeah. How much resolution is there other than to make a decision the other way, which is to instruct the staff to communicate to the counties that we will expect that we will utilize the density standards in the RMP. Why is that there? The issue of the moment.
Well, the 13 people here, that was six. If I ask it the other way, there might be seven.
Make a motion.
So we need eight?
We need eight.
Where is Glenn?
Right.
I don't think you'd get Glenn's.
Right.
There's only a strong vote.
Maybe we could work on something.
How come the science was good enough from the DEP for critical habitat, but the science for septic density isn't good enough today?
I'm not sure. I don't think that's what being suggested.
Well, I think that...
It's policy, Kurt. It's not the science.
It's policy.
But there's two levels of science. You know, there's the science that says that septics at this level is acceptable and safe. And then there's some additional science that says, well, the septic density should really be this. I mean, so it goes beyond policy. I mean, there's two.
From my perspective, I don't think there's a difference. The process of the scientific development was on the T&E information, the DEP and the staff developed it in concert based on information around the highlands, right? There are highlands criteria in that landscape three. Again, we developed the water quality information and the septic information specific to the highlands. So that's why it's appropriate that DEP didn't use the same basis.
I think there is a guidance to the county give, which if I understand it right, is that where the plan is and is likely to be when we adopt it is with a septic density that in some cases will be required, in some cases will be recommended at a minimum. So if they're looking for guidance to the towns, it's a question whether the council is going to require that in the planning area towns that don't conform. But in any case, the plan's going to recommend that. Right?
Well, what they're doing, they're doing
the county could recommend it to the towns, but it's not yet clear. And they're probably not going to complete their plans between Tuesday and Thursday. So.
They won't complete the plans because they are doing the analysis now. They're trying to get this done so that it's a model for the rest of the state. And so they are actually trying to get this done as rapidly as possible. And so they will be telling their towns, in the case of Somerset, outside of the Highlands region, that the baseline is 2 milligrams per litre. And what they really wanted to know was for the planning area towns, what direction they would give.
Right. But that's implicit in the recommendation, is the last sentence is that non-required elements of the plan would be recommended. So we would be recommended.
Right. They certainly recommend it.
Yes.
Right. I'm interested to hear or see a document that explains the staff position on both sides of the issue. Why is the staff making the recommendation that it's making?
I think it really came down, as we discussed it, we discussed it with Tom from a legal perspective, we understand that you have the authority to do this. The question really was a question of what we take as the legislative mandate in the division of the area between planning and preservation area. And we talked about capital infrastructure, so pipes for potable water and pipes for sewer, as being very growth-inducing infrastructure. And so we felt that there it was very clear. And for state agency coordination and state dollars that goes into that kind of infrastructure versus the septic density. And so we felt that we were trying to stay with the mandates of the Act as well, which I know that the protective nature of it does require protection of the whole region, but it does have other goals that are specific to the planning area. And so it was really looking at the fact that the legislature decided to divide this area in two, and we were trying to grapple and wrestle with how best then to move this decision forward, and we had never grappled with the septic density issue in terms of the planning area municipalities.
In practical terms, I've heard a lot about overpolluting with the DEP standards. Is the DEP standard a pollution standard? What I'm saying is it not protective at all? Is it something that says if you use the DEP standard, you're going to be polluting rather than something else? Are you not protecting with the DEP standard except not to the same degree?
I think the distinction, and I think Tim was alluding to this, it was our analysis was a region-specific analysis. The DEP standard is a statewide average, but it's still based upon a water quality protection goal.
Sure.
getting to that, though, has this been discussed with the DEP, and do we know how they feel about this?
The DEP were turning to us to ask us at the same meeting with Somerset County. They wanted to know what our recommendation was. Yes.
So I don't think we're going to resolve this today, so I think we can revisit it as soon as you're ready to present us more information.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Can I ask just one simple question related to this? Why could we not discuss this? Why is this memo confidential?
It was a legal analysis. Why we did this bullet is we were not writing up any element of the plan. We needed to get council direction.
Legal memos in general are confidential, where it's the attorney's viewpoint of what is legal, what's constitutional, what's allowed by the law, and what is
correct.
And just one point of clarification, Debbie, after these meetings, we'll be putting each PowerPoint each week onto the calendar so that the public can see it as well, because we've had many calls that it assists people. So I just want to let you know that it will be available online. We'll send it to you as well. No, not that PowerPoint.
But we can go into executive session at any point to discuss any of the little memos.
We're going to revisit this.
So that concludes the presentation.
I just had a question going back to the housing, if I may.
No.
Referred to several times, something a little simpler, to growth area.
Oh, I think
we really have not discussed growth areas.
And that's why we actually added that language, because the Supreme Court was very clear that the obligation is triggered by a growth area. In the preservation area, it's clear that most of that area will not be growth areas, but the planning area of towns of course will have that option.
Yeah, but what does a growth area mean in context of the regional master plan? Is it an existing community zone?
Well, it's a combination of two things. The COA's rules do have a combination of addressing the growth area issue through both the recognition of the state planning designations and also in terms of site suitability determinations. So they do address that issue through that process. The issue of resource protection will be built into the issue of appropriate lands for development through the COA process. They do have mechanisms to address the growth area issue through their regulations.
Except that I think that it's just very confusing to all of a sudden read in one of our documents something called a growth area. Well, since we've been very careful not to designate any area in those terms.
Correct.
And if you feel from a legal standpoint we've got to talk in COA terms, then somewhere we should in this document say we're talking in COA terms.
What we did was we wanted to ensure that the plan ensures that the constitutional obligation is met. So we parroted the language from the New Jersey Supreme Court in its non-oral decisions to ensure that where applicable, they'll meet the constitutional obligation. There may be instances where municipalities can demonstrate they do not meet that threshold, and then they do not need to meet that threshold.
Would it help if we put that in quotation marks?
We got to put something in there.
Mimi, could it put in quotation marks and put it as defined by the Mount Laurel Act? Because it was in talking with Tom about this when he used that language, it was from the from Mount Laurel. So we put in quotation marks and, okay.
Okay, that's good. All right. Any other comments? We'll turn to public comments.
So where are we then with this?
Which?
It's a housing issue. I raised this issue about the rules that seemed inconsistent with what
you and Tom was going to look at that.
Yeah,
I find it hard
so this
to believe
is still
that,
an open.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that's possible because it's hard to imagine a lot of municipalities that petition COA to increase their numbers, but maybe.
We'll certainly look into it.
Yeah.
That's not what we've heard from our planners, by the way.
Right.
You know, you can petition COA to reduce the numbers, then you can try to make a case for it, and they can accept that or reject it, but I don't think it's...
I've heard that from others.
There's a lot of comments that go into the contrary.
That should be factually easy to find.
Yep. And the third round of COA things haven't even been really finalized.
You're talking about 3B. 3B now.
Whatever.
We've had 3A.
the court.
So,
any other comments before we turn to public comment?
I just wanted to make a comment, though. So, since they're not finalized and they're going to probably continue to be challenged in the courts, all we're going to have to require is that they have conformed to round two.
Well,
which hopefully
we should be encouraging compliance with it, no doubt about that. But what it is,
it's going to be things to be seen.
I mean, I think it's inevitable that they'll be challenged in court, but they may be being implemented while they're being challenged. They may not be in this case. May or may not be stayed. Anyone for the public who hasn't spoken to the council before would like to speak? Anyone who has spoken would like to speak? Yes.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I just quickly first wanted to recognize Debbie Pasquarelli, who was just recognized by the New Jersey Planning Officials, whatever they are, NJPO, for planning achievements such as leadership in land use growth and open space management, and say congratulations.
Thank you.
To the documents that we've read today, we've obviously not had much time to look at them, But number one, as you know, one of our calls has been for clear standards. And there's lots of references throughout this thing about developing standards. We believe that standards are really important to be in the RMP because you are going to be sued. Having your standards in the RMP will protect you. I recognize that I would probably be told the standards are in the RMP. But I have to tell you, they're hellish hard to find. If you can do a word search, maybe you can find them that way. But you really need to call out the standards because that will be the easiest way for people to understand what you really need. There is reference to LIDAR. I know you have the LIDAR complete, and I know that you've been perhaps struggling to do the finishing touches on it so that you can use it. And I'm just curious to know when that might happen.
Other comments? We're not going to do questions and answers here. So.
Okay. It is very difficult for the public to understand the documents you hand out if you don't track the changes between what you had before and what we're looking at now. It would be very much easier for us to follow where you're going if there was some way for us to know exactly where the changes were between the final draft RMP and what's being proposed. We are very disappointed that you would propose weakening the septic density standards in the planning area. I'm very grateful that there wasn't a majority today to move forward with what was proposed by the staff. I believe that you are, in essence, abandoning the planning area by, if you take this action, and just giving up on the idea of complete opt-in from planning area towns. I also think that it will have a profound effect on what happens with COA, because you're basically saying, you can do this in planning area towns, COA, but we want to be stricter. I think that will get you into terrible trouble down the road. I think you are sending a very mixed message about how important it is to protect the resources, not only water quality, but quantity, which is one of the things that the nitrate dilution standards also do. And also, it is my understanding that you have not completed harmonization yet, your proposal for harmonization, your memorandum of understanding with DEP. It would be absolutely marvelous if DEP were to completely harmonize with everything in the RMP. I'm willing to take a wild guess that DEP won't agree to that, in which case there is still a possibility, without you giving up your principles, there is still a possibility for 2 milligrams per liter in those 5 Somerset County towns to be possible in planning area communities that may choose not to opt in. And then the last thing, I used to be the director of the Great Swamp Watershed Association. The Great Swamp Watershed Association was given a piece of property right across the street, right across 287, from the piece of property in Harding Township, not Morris Township, that is currently being sought by Morris Township for acquisition. Harding Township has not, Harding Township doesn't own the property, but Morris Township would like this property to secede and become part of Morris Township. Harding Township has not decided at this time, and I only know this because I'm on the Open Space Committee in Harding, has not decided at this time whether that is even a possibility or whether this is likely to go forward. However, I do know that that property was all once habitat for wood turtle. I don't know about box turtle, and I am sure not bog turtle, but certainly wood turtle. And there are several hydrologic connections, also known as large culverts, under 287. That uphill property would have been completely flooded without them. There are several of them that come from this property onto the Great Swamp Watershed Association's property. It's the end of Tiger Lily Lane. I strongly recommend you all go visit it. It's a great place to go. And indeed, turtles, which happen to be aquatic creatures quite a lot of the time, do use them and do, in fact, go back and forth under 287. And that is the major reason why DEP has agreed to review this property to see if indeed this is habitat for wood turtle. So just to clear that up. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Sir.
David Chope, I am a farmer in Lebanon Township. I've asked several times, I'll ask again. I want to look at the peer-reviewed study that talks about the health hazards of nitrates of 10 milligrams per liter and over. I've asked for it numerous times. All you're doing is you're relying on DEP's information. If DEP has it, they should furnish it to you so that I could see it. I believe it doesn't exist. I have seen photographs and presented you with a photograph of and an article of two peregrine falcons who made their home in a steeple in Elizabeth. I have photographs of a peregrine falcon perched on a broken pipe sticking out of a landfill in the Meadowlands. Peregrine falcons recently constructed a nest on a Pennsylvania Power and Light tower, and they're quite happy making their home there. And I suggested in the past that you take and make everything potential habitat for everything. It would just be simpler. You've almost done that by saying that 509,000 acres are in fact critical habitat. When you subtract the occasional house, the public-owned lands, you can now do an overlay to see what's left. I doubt there will be much left at all, but we need to see it. You have the information. Let's see it. And it seems to be, from what I heard today, I'm hearing some of the exemptions that are in the Act disappearing by virtue of your applying the nitrate dilution standards to properties that were, quote, exempt, unquote. The Act also speaks of not just water quality, not just water quantity. It speaks of economic viability. It speaks of to just compensation. It speaks to agricultural viability. I don't hear any of this stuff being talked about in any depth at all. All I hear about is let's protect the toad here and the salamander there, because they may be there. They don't even have to be there. They just have to have the potential for being there. This is asinine. Let me see the overlay of the 509,000 acres with the subtraction of publicly held lands, people who actually live in houses up here, stuff like that. I think that would be great to see. I think once you show me this overlay, you can take the other 50-something and not even use them. They will not be necessary.
Good evening, Monique Purcell, New Jersey Department of Agriculture.
just a few comments on the items that were discussed today. I think most of the sections that were discussed were actually tweaks for language and so forth, but I do have some concerns about the critical habitat section. Specifically, objective W, and then some of the two other objectives that I feel that there'd be no way to meet the objectives or the policies except through the waiver process. And that waiver process seems to be very onerous as well. So my concern is that this might be some good projects that won't be able to go forward because of, you know, the natural resource issue. And I think it's important that there is some flexibility given to mitigate that. I mean, I'm supportive of the Critical Habitat Conservation Management Plan because I feel that's a good way to get to the broader issue and allow some flexibility. But I am concerned with a couple of these objectives because I just feel it's going to tie the hands of the council. They won't be able to do a specific project that makes sense for a lot of reasons because of one feature or the critical habitat element of the plan. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I'd like to thank the council for questioning the recommendation to, in the water quality management planning process, to not consider the septic density standards. I think that the council rightly sees that this really is a matter of principle, and that the plan and the principles that it embodies are really what the council needs to be supporting and endorsing. And I think that it's really good, and I congratulate the council and straw vote in that direction. I think that, you know, those of us who worked on protecting the highlands for a long time did not want to see it chopped into, the baby chopped in half in order to get the legislation. You know, that was not the original intent. And the reason that the act was passed at all really was protection of water and water supply. So even though there is language in the act about economic development and there's all kinds of things about other things that should happen, that wasn't the reason the act got passed. The act just got passed because enough legislators believed that the water supply really was critical. And it really is critical for the whole region, not just for the preservation area. So I really hope that the full council and the staff will reconsider this recommendation and go with the plan. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm a Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. On the items that were under discussion today, I am very interested, obviously, in the septic density issue. I want to urge you to use the authority that you have to protect the natural resources to the greatest extent possible. This issue relates to zoning and planning densities throughout the region, and particularly in the planning area upstream of numerous potable water intakes. I would hope that you would use the authority that the Act has given you to be as protective and effective as you can be in protecting water resources. And I think applying the septic density requirements that you've labored over scientifically is a good idea. So please, if this issue should come up again at some time in the near future, I would urge, and ANJEC would urge you, to err on the side of caution in protecting water quality. On the issue of COA issues, this whole process with the third round rules is causing an awful lot of noise in the system, so to speak, among municipalities. We're having a lot of difficulty getting municipalities to focus on conformance until something is done about the COA situation. The Debbie's point about the rule for closing the option to reduce the density or reduce a requirement, I think is real, and I think it's in the rule.
I didn't make it up there.
And others have noticed it. And I think that the council needs to take an advocacy role with COA, with DCA, and with the governor, if necessary, to protect the natural resources of the Highlands. Letting this percolate through the court system is probably the greatest way to lose any regional focus that the plan would allow us to have. That being said, that's not what I came prepared to do today. I was trying to help the council in looking at the issues that you've defined for further discussion. And the cluster issue was right at the front of the list, so I started with that one. After about 12 hours of reading the goals, policies, and objectives, I realized I did not understand the goals, policies, and objectives. I'm not a particularly dumb guy, but I wanted to know why I could not understand, after study and due diligence, those provisions. And I found a very interesting tool that I would recommend to you about writing in the final plan. In your word processing program, in Microsoft Word, there are two tests that can be applied to any text. One is a readability test, and the other one is a grade level test. And these tests are well defined. I did some research on the tests themselves and found that they are recognized throughout the communications industry, and they're even used by the Department of Defense. Who has
that doesn't strengthen your argument.
I'll strengthen it in just a second. The point being that the Department of Defense has a very various communications, varied communications problem. It has to deal with people who are virtually illiterate at one end and the Secretary of Defense at the other end. And so appropriate. Starting to sound like Lewis Black.
Right, you are.
But I guess, anyway, there are two tests that can be applied very easily with the word processing program that you all have access to. The Reading Ease test bases its results on a high number being good. So if something gets a higher score, it's easier to read. The grade level test is self-explanatory. It tells you what your grade level is. So I took some passages just sort of at random out of the goals, policies, objectives, and programs of clustering and ran them through. The first one I did said, the use of clustering for new development and particularly residential development is a key mechanism for development siting that can reduce the environmental impacts of development and minimize the potential for conflict between the development and neighboring agricultural activities. Got that?
No.
Four developments.
So I ran it through the tests. The reading ease came up 0.0. And the grade level came up to be 25.9. Now that really scared me because I'm not young enough to go back to school to be worthy of reading the RMP.
Taking some, the point here, Dave.
Well, the point is there's a very good tool here for you to use, and I would recommend that you use it. Taking some shots at rewriting that paragraph, I was able to get it up to a reading ease score of 42.8, which is in Time Magazine territory, and 11.7 in grade level. And that paragraph I just read you became, placing buildings in a cluster on a site can reduce harmful environmental impacts and prevent conflicts with farming. You got that? That works. So as you go through, there's some other examples in what I'm handing you today. It's really a fun thing to do. I wish I would have been here a couple of years ago before you all started writing with that advice. But please take that advice. And particularly for things that are guidance documents or things that have practical application directly by municipalities, run those checks on them before you put them out. Thank you.
Thank you. I got 30 papers from college seniors to read in the next 4 days. I'm going to use this.
He was trying to Zoom you.
Other comments?
Good afternoon, everybody. Helen Heinrich, New Jersey Farm Bureau. And congratulations. I thought we were going to be here till 8 o'clock with that very ambitious list of things to talk about.
It's up to you.
You're expecting me to bring up some large questions. In terms of the using the 2 milligrams per liter or the RMP standards, it seems to me if you insist that Somerset County go beyond recommending to their planning area towns to use that standard, you in effect have in one stroke downzoned those towns without any coordination consideration with them. And I don't think that this was, in my understanding anyway, of the intent of the Act. It's kind of alarming to hear that the whole intent of the Highlands Act is water protection. It seemed to me it was also better municipal planning for water protection. And you aren't going to get better municipal planning if a lot of towns don't decide to use your, to opt into your plan. And I guess I agree that if you set that higher standard without much consultation with the towns, that is certainly going to raise a lot of questions, not just in Somerset County, but if this gets applied, this is what you're going to apply to the other counties. I'm concerned about the process. I spent a lot of time working on the state plan, all 3 versions of it. And the Plan Development Committee there had sort of informal workshop situation where the issues were discussed, but the public could enter into the discussion at the time the issue came up, whether that will work with this situation or not. I think you're missing a lot of good suggestions as you think about these issues. Is there some way to let some of this contribute and, you know, 1.5 minutes to your discussion? I think you'd find it very valuable. And if you're taking votes, I mean, even straw votes, it's very alarming to sit back there and not be able to give you our feedback when you're even doing that. I agree with the point that you look at these documents, and this was PowerPoint went by us very fast, very dense wording. I hope that you will highlight the changes, because now we have to go back to these documents that we're concerned about, and 2 of them concern the farm community, the critical habitat, and the RMP update. We commented on both of those in our comments specifically. But if you could highlight the changes, it would really be helpful. Since we don't get the documents until we walk in here, that would be help. In terms of the critical habitat, we still disagree that it's got a scientific basis. We don't find any other state that's using the same process. If it's such a good process, why don't they use it? In fact, some scientists have said that using the consensus method rather than research in actual identification of the animals and plants is highly suspect, but I think it's a problem in that the maps are not correct and that there's just a lot of doubt about whether the method is scientifically rigorous enough to be the basis of such enormous land use decisions. So thank you.
Thank you.
Marion Harris, Morris County Trust for Historic Preservation. I'm sitting here feeling very deprived because all the people who have to talk about natural resources have things to chew on you about that you're going to talk about. And our cultural resource stuff hasn't even made the cut of the list of things that you think need more discussion. I don't know how to deal with this because in some cases I think that a few of our suggestions and comments did actually get into the revised plan. It seems to me that there are more cross-references to historic resources now than there were before. There's also an improvement in the case of a suggestion that there be design guidelines, which is a good thing because it's a way of setting standards, but on the other hand, there's the question of how you use them, because guidelines are just that, guidelines, and if you start using them to enforce things, it's rather like trying to use the Secretary of Interior standards, which requires a master's degree to interpret. So that's a sort of mixed blessing. But some of the comments that we made, and I think that our Cultural Resource Committee comments did get into the coalition comments as well as our own, were very, very fundamental. The idea that the history section is so weak that the description of community character and then the succeeding plan to protect resources could not be based on that history that is as vague as it is now. That's a pretty fundamental kind of comment. And the other comment, that the language about the protection of cultural resources doesn't sound as if it would, as if it came from people who were in the habit of using that language, that affects the entire approach to the protection of cultural resources that is throughout the plan. That wasn't just whining, by the way. It's something that gets into your blood when you've been in, for God's sake, 40 years in the field. You talk the way and you recognize what it means. But that would be some serious rewriting, and it would probably take the touch of somebody who'd been in there for a long time. I don't think that there is anybody like that available to do that job. And that's a serious problem, because at the moment, cultural resources are not protected by the language in the plan at all. And the reference to the possibility of using the municipal protection process, that is so weak that it is not going to work. What are you going to do if you have to review a case that meets all of your natural resource standards, but there sits a historic resource right in the middle of it that the applicant proposes to destroy? Is that going to be enough for you to say, well, that's it, go home? Are you really protecting the resources, or is that just going to embarrass you? Well, that's just one kind of thing you're going to have to deal with. The other question is how you're going to increase the list of resources that's there, because we've told you that even for our purposes, the state and national register listings are much too short a list. And I don't see how you can possibly improve that. If you turn to the municipal sources, they're inadequate and their standards are widely varying from town to town. And if you try to set up your own standards, you are not prepared to do that. So these are things that are making me very unhappy as I sit here thinking they're not going to talk about any changes in the way they're proposing to cover historic resources. And I'd like very much to hear that something is going to move in that direction.
Any other comments? Council member comments?
I have a question. I was on the phone at the early part of the meeting driving up here, and I hit a dead zone in this part of the conversation.
You sounded like you went underwater.
I also sneezed. You probably heard the sneeze. There was discussion about, I can't remember which item we were on, whether it was critical habitat or lake management, but the discussion about standards and criteria was brought up in guidance document. And I wanted to ask Eileen to just review that again
Why don't we do that privately, because I think everyone else here heard it, so otherwise we could
the leading question is going to be, where is it relative to the adoption of the regional master plan? That's why I'm asking.
Where is the critical habitat?
The guidance documents.
Do you want to answer that?
Yeah, and I did talk about that. What I said was that I knew you'd ask, and your council would ask when that would be prepared, and it will be ready for implementation.
I'm sorry?
It will be ready when we start implementation of the plan. We will have the guidance document.
But not when we adopt the plan.
Thank you.
Okay. We're not meeting again until a week from today, at 10 o'clock, May 1st. Motion to adjourn?
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Attention. Thank you all.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.